When that clay pot hit the floor, I burst into tears. I did. I didn't even know exactly why, except that I'd been trying so hard and wanted so much to do well and do right and make everything right, and I'd been holding out to myself, hey, you can do this, it's all good, you're fine, it's all fine. I was busily painting happy faces on everything. And here she was, this person I trusted who was holding us, really. And there it was, that shattered pot on the floor that was us, our dreams, our hopes, and our lives. It was all we'd lost or that had been broken individually and collectively, and there we were, our shards on the floor, broken in pieces. It was the beginning of a sermon made for seminary students, many of whom had been through stuff that had led us there. It's not unusual for really big challenges to lead to really big changes, and sometimes people go to seminary. And it's not also unusual for people who go to seminary to have really big dreams of who we might become in the hands of that great potter, of what we might become when we give ourselves over to something that has called to us so deeply and compellingly. It was a sermon made for a group of people who'd seen some hard things, who had big dreams, and whose dreams do not, will not, had not always come true. But really then, in that way, it's a message for all of us too, I think, for anyone who's had a dream, a vision, a deep yearning for something big, whether that's a vocation or a great love, a big wish for the lives of the children you love, whether that's hopes for something important to manifest in the world. We know things do not always turn out the way we planned or want, no matter how much we planned or how much we wanted. So perhaps that message and this message is for anyone who's seen hard things, been through hard stuff, who's been broken or seen broken, and found ourselves needing to recoup and rethink and redo. For anyone who started on a path and found their GPS recalculating, saying you're on the wrong road, this is a dead end, there's a detour here, you cannot go this way after all. But unlike our actual GPS, which will blandly and uneventfully find a new route for your car, our life redirections tend not to happen so placidly or dispassionately. Anger, regret, discouragement not infrequently accompany these moments of life reorientation, as well as uncertainty, confusion, resistance, irritation, shame, unhappiness, fear. Think about it. Some of the littlest detours can send even the calmest of us into a tizzy. I know I get a little antsy when I don't get to eat my lunch or dinner at the time I was expecting to. And how many of us react when our morning coffee or bagel or newspaper or whatever we were counting on turns not to be available? There's something about us humans that likes consistency and only likes change when we ourselves initiate it. And sometimes, not even then. And we are living in a time, as we do, where so much feels unsettled or unsettling, where the chaos we see on the big stage has a way of filtering into our consciousness, making the hard feel harder, margins feel thinner, tempers run shorter. So when the big upheavals hit, illness, accident, heartbreak, career change, moves, loss, anything, when the destination we thought we were heading towards is not where we end up, how do we handle it? What do we do? We each have our tendencies. Some of us try to shake it off or shoulder on. We pull ourselves up. We try harder. We just keep going. Eventually, you will bounce back, we say to ourselves. It'll be fine. And well-meaning friends will tell you that. It'll all be fine. Others of us tend toward fatalism, feeling abundantly clear that there is no bouncing back from this one. We will not be fooled. Humpty Dumpty has fallen. There will be no take two. We are vulnerable for staying down for the count. And then some of us flip between the two extremes, trying hard to regain our ground, regain control, alternating with giving in to a despairing recognition that things will never be the same. In that messy, fertile mix, I appreciate the perspective of Navy SEAL Eric Greitens, author of the book Resilience, Hard-Won Wisdom for Living a Better Life. His words speak a sobering truth that is, nevertheless, hopeful. Life's reality, he writes, is that we cannot bounce back. We cannot bounce back because we cannot go back in time to the people we used to be. The parent who loses a child never bounces back. The 19-year-old who sails for war is gone forever, even if he returns. We know there is no bouncing back. What there is moving through. What happens to us becomes part of us. Resilient people do not bounce back from hard experiences. They find healthy ways to integrate them into their lives. And he concludes, and this is the part I find particularly hopeful. In time, people find that even great calamity, met with great spirit, can create great strength. Now, for the skeptics among us, of which I am one, at first glance, that sentiment that great calamity met with great spirit can create great strength, that may sound like the same old tired line that every cloud has a silver lining and what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Anyone who's struggling with loss and heard that sentiment knows how unsoothing and non-comforting that actually is and how dismissive of your real present time pain. But a platitude is not what I hear Eric offering here. What he's saying, and what I believe is possible, is not a cliche. It's a reorientation, an incorporation, an expansion of the soul that is possible when we bring great spirit into the mix. And that's good news, because living life means loss. Really living, really caring, really risking means we'll stumble. It means we'll fall. It means we will hurt. But we can get back up. Brené Brown, in her book Rising Strong, also speaks to that getting up. She speaks to the falling and then rising strong. How does it work? She calls it the physics of vulnerability. She lists some rules of engagement. She has 10. I'll highlight 5. Number 1, if we are brave enough, often enough, we will fall. Number 2, Once we fall in the service of being brave, we can never go back. We do not bounce back, in Greiton's words. What happens instead is courage transforms the emotional structure of our being. Number three, courage is contagious. We inspire each other. Number four, the journey from falling to getting up is yours and personal to you, but you need other people. The way Brené puts it is that we cannot do it alone. Number five, rising strong is a spiritual practice, which means it is intentional, it is not necessarily easy, and it works best when we recognize our connection with others, our connection with life, when we see ourselves as part of a larger whole grounded in love and belonging. Later in the book, Brené describes in more detail what the rising strong process looks like in the stories of courage she's encountered. There is what she calls a reckoning, reflecting on what happened, taking a good, long, courageous look at those shards on the floor and the stories we're telling ourselves about them. Then there is what she calls the rumbling with feelings like shame, blame, resentment, heartbreak, as well as generosity and forgiveness. And then the third is the revolution. Honest, authentic engagement with the rumble and the reckoning leads to the revolution, which is a deep, tumultuous, groundbreaking, no turning back transformation. The process may be a series of incremental changes, but when the process becomes a practice, a way of engaging with the world, it can ignite revolutionary change. It changes us, and it changes the people around us. I can't help but recognize the similarities between the rising strong process and the connection group descriptions we've been hearing last week and this week. Last week, David Carroll spoke of some of his experiences. He described people telling their stories, reckoning with them. Stories of success and challenge, personal and job issues, recovery from injury or illness, travel under challenging circumstances, interactions with children, stories, I gather, of courage that included moments of drama as well as moments of humor, stories that inspired and taught. And Laura Giusti this morning describing using groups as a time to explore things that she struggles with or wishes were different, and finding more clarity and peace. The groups are a chance to take time to step back and to move through, to find that great spirit. In the sermon she preached after that dramatic opening I described, Reverend Mary Ludi reminded us, her seminary students, that being clay in the hands of a great potter can be rough going. When we set out to live big, meaningful lives to which we give our hearts, when we become willing to be changed in service of something greater, we are going to experience loss and relinquishment, because that's what change means. The great joy of an expansive, big, purpose-filled life doesn't necessarily come easy. And every time we rise from a fall, every time we're willing to acknowledge the shards on the floor, reckon with our stories, rumble with our feelings, every time we choose courage, vulnerability, and connection over denial and discouragement, we grow, we gain, we inspire, and become part of something much bigger and more meaningful. We become part, to use Brown's term, of a resilience revolution. May we here today. Find the will to rise, to recalculate, reorient, and live the joy-filled life that is available to each of us. One day, one experience, one open-hearted act of courage at a time. May it be so. Amen.